The sticky bomb hit the smoothly curving surface and did not rebound. Jimmy gave the thread an experimental twitch, then a harder tug. Like a fisherman hauling in his catch, he slowly wound Dragonfly across to the tip of the appropriately christened Big Horn until he was able to put out his hand and make contact with it. "I suppose you could call this some kind of touchdown," he reported to Hub Control. "It feels like glass, almost frictionless and slightly warm. The sticky bomb worked fine. Now I'm trying the mic. Let's see if the suction pad holds as well. Plugging in the leads. Anything coming through?" There was a long pause. Then Hub Control said disgustedly, "Not a damn thing, except the usual thermal noises. Will you tap it with a piece of metal? Then at least we'll find if it's hollow." "Okay. Now what?" "We'd like you to fly along the spike, making a complete scan every half kilometer and looking out for anything unusual. Then, if you're sure it's safe, you might go across to one of the little horns, but only if you're certain you can get back to zero G without any problems."
3 kilometers from the axis? That's slightly above lunar gravity. Dragonfly was designed for that. I'll just have to work harder.
"Jimmy, this is the captain. I've got second thoughts on that. Judging by your pictures, the smaller spikes are just the same as the big one. Get the best coverage of them you can with the zoom lens. I don't want you leaving the low-gravity region, unless you see something that looks very important. Then, we'll talk it over."
"Okay, Skipper," said Jimmy, and perhaps there was just a trace of relief in his voice. "I'll stay close to Bighorn. Here we go again."
He felt he was dropping straight downward into a narrow valley between a group of incredibly tall and slender mountains. Bighorn now towered a kilometer above him, and the 6 spikes of the Little Horns were looming up all around. The complex of buttresses and flying arches that surrounded the lower slopes was approaching rapidly. He wondered if he could make a safe landing somewhere down there in that cyclopean architecture. He could no longer land on Bighorn itself, for the gravity on its widening slopes was now too powerful to be counteracted by the feeble force of the sticky bomb. As he came ever closer to the South Pole, he began to feel more and more like a sparrow flying beneath the vaulted roof of some great cathedral, though no cathedral ever built had been even 1/100th the size of this place. He wondered if it was indeed a religious shrine, or something remotely analogous, but quickly dismissed the idea. Nowhere in Rama had there been any trace of artistic expression. Everything was purely functional. Perhaps the Ramans felt that they already knew the ultimate secrets of the universe and were no longer haunted by the yearnings and aspirations that drove mankind. That was a chilling thought, quite alien to Jimmy's usually not very profound philosophy. He felt an urgent need to resume human contact and reported his situation back to his distant friends.
"Say again, Dragonfly," replied Hub Control. "We can't understand you. Your transmission is garbled."
"I repeat, I'm near the base of Little Horn Number 6, and am using the sticky bomb to haul myself in."
"Understand only partially. Can you hear me?"
"Yes, perfectly. Repeat, perfectly."
"Please start counting numbers."
1, 2, 3, 4.
"Got part of that. Give us beacon for 15 seconds, then go back to voice."
"Here it is."
Jimmy switched on the low-powered beacon that would locate him anywhere inside Rama, and counted off the seconds. When he went over to voice again, he asked plaintively,
"What's happening? Can you hear me now?"
Presumably Hub Control didn't, because the controller then asked for 15 seconds of TV. Not until Jimmy had repeated the question twice did the message get through.
"Glad you can hear us okay, Jimmy, but there's something very peculiar happening at your end. Listen."
Over the radio, he heard the familiar whistle of his own beacon played back to him. For a moment, it was perfectly normal. Then a weird distortion crept into it. The thousand-cycle whistle became modulated by a deep, throbbing pulse so low that it was almost beneath the threshold of hearing. It was a kind of basso profundo flutter in which each individual vibration could be heard, and the modulation was itself modulated. It rose and fell, with a period of about 5 seconds. Never for a moment did it occur to Jimmy that there was something wrong with his radio transmitter. This was from outside, though what it was and what it meant was beyond his imagination. Hub Control was not much wiser, but at least it had a theory.
"We think you must be in some kind of very intense field, probably magnetic, with a frequency of about 10 cycles. It may be strong enough to be dangerous. Suggest you get out right away. It may be only local. Switch on your beacon again, and we'll play it back to you. Then you can tell when you're getting clear of the interference."
Jimmy hastily jerked the sticky bomb loose and abandoned his attempt to land. He swung Dragonfly around in a wide circle, listening as he did so to the sound that wavered in his earphones. After flying only a few meters, he could tell that its intensity was falling rapidly. As Hub Control had guessed, it was extremely localized. He paused at the last spot where he could hear it, like a faint throbbing deep in his brain. So might a primitive savage have listened in awe-struck ignorance to the low humming of a giant power transformer. And even the savage might have guessed that the sound he heard was merely the stray leakage from colossal energies, fully controlled, but biding their time. Whatever this sound meant, Jimmy was glad to be clear of it. This was no place among the overwhelming architecture of the South Pole for a lone man to listen to the voice of Rama.